Hey everyone, welcome back to the On Track podcast. We are again doing a podcast from my home. Just like most of you, I'm working from home, as is my guest, who is the CEO and president of IPC, John Mitchell.
Welcome to Altium's On Track podcast, where we talk to leaders about PCB design, tackling subjects ranging from schematic capture all the way to the manufacturing floor. I'm your host, Judy Warner. Please listen in every week and subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all your favorite podcast apps. And be sure to check out the show notes at altium.com/podcast, where you can find great resources and multiple ways to connect with us on social media.
So, John, welcome to the podcast today, and I'm looking forward to getting caught up with you.
Thanks, Judy. It's great to be here.
Well, why don't you, for our listeners, give us a brief intro of yourself, and not that IPC needs an introduction, but just give us a brief overview of the activities of IPC.
Sure. So I'm the president and CEO of IPC. IPC is a trade association for the electronics manufacturing industry across the globe. We have, about 6,000 member locations scattered around the world. We focus on primarily four things for the industry: standards, education, advocacy, and solutions. And really, our primary mission is to help the electronics industry continue to be successful, help their businesses grow, and help. And we try to help them overcome problems as we go forward.
So, John, many people think of standards when they think of IPC, but I've been reading a lot about how much you're advocating for the industry during this time when plants are closing and the supply chain is interrupted. So can you tell us a little bit about your advocacy efforts?
Sure, happy to. As you say, we've been a bit busy globally. This is impacting, COVID-19 is really impacting everything. We started in January full on with our members and our offices in China, getting shut down there and trying to deal with things. The great news is that China is really back in business. You know, here we are about 6 to 8 weeks later, and China's about 90% in terms of production. So that is wonderful news. There have been few individuals that have been impacted in the industry, which is also just wonderful news. As we ask these questions, how many people in your plants actually have been infected? And we're struggling to find anyone.
That's amazing.
It's just a great blessing to the industry. And so we're very pleased about that. And the industry really, not only have we been impacted by it, but we're the solution. You know, all of these different tools to combat this virus, many of them rely on electronics. And that's, what we're all about. And so from an advocacy perspective, now as it's moved into Europe and into North America, there are many countries that are doing many different things in order to stimulate the economy, to help things keep rolling or keep moving or stay employed or have income during these tumultuous times. And so IPC, you know, we've always had an advocacy arm, and we focus on that. But maybe many of our members don't necessarily see it every day.
You're right.
The business leaders do, but not necessarily, you know, all of the electrical engineers in the world don't sit there and go, oh, well, I'm so glad that IPC is at Brussels, or I'm glad they're talking with Beijing, or good thing they're over there at DC. That's probably not the first thing they think about when they think about us. So we're very happy that we have been forming these relationships. I've often heard it referred to as we've spent the time, you know, building the firehouse in case of a fire. Well, guess what? We've got a fire. You know, and so we're working on, and thankfully we have those relationships and we've been able to work with those. There's been some, a lot of activity, as you can imagine. In the United States alone, this most recent stimulus package, I think it's somewhere near $2 trillion that they're allocating. There's a lot of questions about that. It sounds good, but nobody really knows how to grab hold of it and actually leverage it. And so because we have people in DC that are working with that, we view it as our job to help inform the industry, to simplify these things as things become clear. And frankly, things are unclear right now. There's a lot of questions that we have, not just for us as the electronics manufacturing industry, but for all of manufacturing. You've heard there's needs. Like people will say, oh, we need more ventilators to be built, or we need more masks, or what have you. And yet there is confusion about how many and where.
Right.
So while we have an industry that's willing to raise their hand and say, hey, I can help with that, it's right now. So we're working with the government trying to get more clarity about how much needs to be built, what exactly needs to be built, where does it need to go, and that, those sort of things. And that's still unclear right now, but that's part of our job is trying to bring that clarity.
Well, I've had some communication via email from IPC lately, and I thought it was really interesting that here our politicians are talking about how great it is that some automakers are stepping up to make ventilators. And I'm like, how about the people that already make the ventilators, right?
And there are some of our industry have already stepped forward and are doing some things like that. You've seen it in recent articles nationally that are doing that. And frankly, you want to make sure they're built right, because these are medical devices. And so that is a challenge as well, trying to find those who are able and capable to go after those kinds of devices. You know, another area, I mentioned the stimulus package. One of the other things that IPC is doing is we've developed and just recently launched what we're calling the IPC roadmap to economic recovery. And it highlights here, maybe I can just mention a few points here. I'm going to look aside on the screen here. But, you know, so if there's all this money available, what can we use to help make sure we can help? So first, we're trying to keep essential electronics manufacturing open, number one priority, you know, support supply chain resiliency. So what can we do to help make sure that products are moving back and forth, both domestically and internationally? Mm-hmm. We're trying to spur global trade by doing some reciprocal, by proposing some reciprocal import duties, et cetera, allowing companies to defer payment on import duties till the end of the year. So different things like that might help things just move faster. Mm-hmm. We've asked groups like the EPA to delay non-essential regulatory actions. And in fact, we were successful in one of those fees. They announced yesterday that they followed our recommendation and they're just postponing it. So that people can focus on the important stuff as opposed to, now, obviously there are essential regulatory actions that we don't want to stop, but some of the stuff that's, you know, kind of a little bit on the fringe that maybe we can just pause for 90 days and kind of get through this. Mm-hmm. We're trying to facilitate shipping and transportation recovery and support the financial security of manufacturing workers and then keep those workers healthy. Just a few of the areas that we've proposed to the group. To the government in order to try to help with some of that.
Why don't you talk for a moment? Like, I imagine that some of our listeners will be like, I didn't know IPC did that. Can you talk a little bit about your group that sort of lives in DC now?
Sure. So we have offices in DC and Brussels, actually, and then we have liaisons in China as well. But the advocacy group globally is led by Chris Mitchell, no relation. Chris, I told him when we were interviewing him that was the biggest thing he had going against him was his last name. It was going to look like there was nepotism. But Chris actually has worked with IPC longer than I have. He was in a consulting group for IPC, and so he is very familiar with IPC's issues, and he has brought leveled up our ability across the globe. We have him, there's a few other people, plus some other external firms here locally in DC in the US. In Brussels, similarly, we've added, and I'm going to forget Allison's last name. Oh my goodness, because we all go by first names. But so she's leading our efforts working with the European Union. And the various regional bodies as well there. And then, of course, we have our Asia offices that are working with various Asia governments as well. So it is a coordinated effort. A lot of we focus on things that you might expect. So typically, we're working in the environmental health and safety arena. We're also working on workforce issues, that's something that's very important to the industry, as well as, you know, things that come up like this, tariffs, trade, and then, of course, national emergencies.
Well, let me pause there for a moment. How do you think that this is sort of a deviating from our main conversation here, but how do you think when the the current administration talks about we're going to change things and we're going to reshore American manufacturing, all that, and tariffs, and you know, there's a lot of saber rattling right now. You know, how do you think that's going to affect, you know, engineers, supply chain, or is it just kind of all conjecture at this point?
You know, it's tough to say. There, the tariffs and trade tools that have been used by governments in order to try to position themselves have definitely had a negative impact on the electronics industry in terms of it's caused delays, it's raised costs. It has done nothing to improve the business relationships as we've gone here. You can't just say, I'm going to create a new factory tomorrow or regenerate this capability over here. Because frankly, even though a lot of due to those trade tariff restrictions that we've had, a lot of business has moved away from China. It hasn't really come back to the U.S. It's gone to Mexico or Southeast Asia for other reasons. So it's really a shifting of the supply chain, which takes time, which can be costly, et cetera. But as far as it actually bringing new businesses back to the U.S., it has had minimal impact in that direction.
Yeah. You know, I was talking to Mike Buteau from UP Media, and he was saying sort of the same thing you're saying, is that luckily for us that the supply chain has widened across other countries, and, you know, that it's fortunate now in an unfortunate way that, you know, as China went down, you know, that we're happening cyclically and not all in parallel, because we can reach out to other areas for supply chain. And now we're, you know, struggling here, but China's back online, as you mentioned. So, you know, he sort of agreed with you that it's a little more distributed.
It is distributed. The challenge is that for several small and medium-sized enterprise, it's not. So the larger companies can shift more, I won't say easily, they have more access to different points of contact. But if you're a small shop and you have one supplier and suddenly that's the only supplier that you have vetted, and it might take 9 months to revet another one and go through all the certifications depending on what you're building. Now suddenly you have a 25% increase in your cost of goods due to a tariff. That can be catastrophic.
Right.
And you don't really have, you know, the 17 others that you have, you know, in your portfolio to draw on because you're not that big of a location.
Right.
And so, it's been more of an impact to the smaller companies, detrimental impact to the smaller companies than to, say, the larger ones.
It'll be interesting to see how this shakes out over time. We're all guessing, but it's an interesting point of interest. I saw a letter yesterday, something that was near and dear to my heart, and that my background is in fabrication and assembly, right, in the electronics industry. And we saw that you issued a letter to all the governors here in the United States. Can you tell us about that letter a little bit?
Sure. So we've had in the United States, there have been these shelter-in-place rules that have been put in place by either mayors, county officials, or governors for the entire state. And there's been a lot of confusion about what is essential. Because the fundamental statement there has been, stay at home unless you're working on essential products or essential goods necessary to the recovery. And there have been some questions about what is essential. And so we wrote letters to all the governors. We wrote them to the governor associations. We wrote it to the Association of All County Seats, basically saying, look, in all likelihood, your electronics manufacturing that exists in the United States is essential. Please don't stop them from working because you just don't understand how this is going to impact, because in many cases, some suppliers don't even know that their devices are going into, say, a medical device or into a communication device or infrastructure. But if they do, it may not be direct because it doesn't say, you know, medical company on the top of their door there where people are thinking about it. So we've provided those letters to the governors. In addition, as we've been doing these weekly industry calls where we have asked executives to dial in, and they're responding and working with each other, which, you know, we're a convener, and it's just been very gratifying to hear the leadership of the industry talking to one another, sharing, here's how we've done this. We did this in China, we brought it over here to the U.S., and now we're acting in this way. Similarly, one of the questions was, how do we handle these shelter-in-place rules? So some people have been very proactive. They've called the police stations and said, by the way, we want you to know, this is why our workers are going to work. Mm-hmm. Others have provided letters from their customers, as well as letters that state, you know, and have attached and highlighted the governor or local rules that have stated these are the industries that are exempt. And they said, here's the piece of paper so people can have them in their cars as they're going to and from the office, if you're to and from the factory. And largely, this is primarily factory workers. Managers or office workers are largely like you and I, working from home, but you can't really build things from home. It's been a challenge, but I think the industry is responding. We've seen some very positive responses from Ohio and California, and they're recognizing that, yes, indeed, like the Department of Homeland Security issued a statement, which is non-binding, but at least now they're referencing it. Same with the Department of Defense, as well as trying to clarify what is actually essential infrastructure.
It's fascinating, right? We put out how, you know, right now, generalist terms like essential. Well, we all think, well, that's the grocery store, nothing else except
even the grocery store is getting disrupted. As I was mentioning, I was on a call yesterday with manufacturing associations from across the country, and there was one tied into the food industry, and they said a labeling manufacturer had been shut down as viewed as non-essential, but you need labels on the food in order to comply and get set out there. So they got them opened up again. It took a day or two, but you know, so you just don't understand the impacts of all of these things going around. So
interconnected, right? Everything's so interconnected. Yeah, that
the manufacturing world is interconnected for sure.
Yeah. That's really fascinating. So thinking about our audience here, EEs, obviously they have to access, you know, when they're developing product with their companies. You know, what we've noticed at Altium is, for the most part, not everyone, it's really challenging, say, for, you know, tier one military designers to go home and comply with ITAR and security and all of that. But for the most part, there's been a somewhat easy transition, right, to home offices. However, I think the supply chain has been top of mind. We've been seeing conversations going on the Altium forum, you know, just talking to each other, can you get parts, right? So what do you think, you know, thinking about our audience from sort of your seat, you know,
and across the industry?
Yes, across the industry, you know, what's your general sense of how this might impact EEs and getting product?
So we, in February, did a survey. We did it again in March. We may do it again in April. We'll see. But we went out to the industry and said, what are you being quoted in terms of delays on products? Mm-hmm. We started based on the China, you know, being shut down. And then as it's grown a little bit in March, how has that changed? The quotation estimates were consistent in February and March. The shift moved, you know, the distribution changed a little bit, but still the average turned out to be about 3 weeks being quoted. But when we, even though they were being quoted that, we asked, what do you really expect it to be? And the answer was more like 5 weeks. So it's not terrible. It is going to affect some things as you're going forward in terms of getting quantity to build stuff. In terms of designing, obviously your design work can still continue. We have to shift a little bit and do things a little bit more modularly. Designing for manufacturing, where you're doing factory visits and trying to, you know, make sure that happened, that has been delayed. So some new product introductions could be impacted in that regard. But overall, you know, we're coming out of this in Asia more than we're getting into it. And now we're coming into it in Europe as well as North America. And so we've probably got, you know, 6 to 8 weeks of rough waters to weather. But on the other side of this, I think we're going to be okay. We'll go forward. We had a an economic impact webinar that we held on Monday. With Joe Bruzuelas from RSM, as well as Sean Dubervac, IPC's chief economist. And they talked about the macro economic impacts of this. And, you know, I would encourage you to go to IPC's website. There actually is a link to that webinar there, and it's quite sobering. But these stimulus packages, as they come out, will have effect. Q2 is going to be down. Let me just give you the 30-second summary of some of what we said.
I'll put the link in the show notes too.
That's great. Yeah. But Q2 is looking to be down, starting to come out in Q3, and things should start rolling again in Q4. And they think by 2021, things should be optimistic. And one of the questions was, well, why do you think it'll come back in 2021? And well, if you're going to dump $3 trillion into the global economy, that's going to have some impact, but people tend to not use it immediately, and it's not necessarily available today. So businesses are going to hunker down a little bit for a couple of months just to say, hey, I got to make sure everything's okay. And then they'll say, okay, now I can start using some of the stimulus to move things forward.
Excellent. And like you said, it's yet to be determined how we access those things. On paper, it looks like they're going to make it loans and things easily accessible. But, you know, reality, and like you said, I'm sure there'll be an adjustment period just to get back to full force. And, it's kind of nice to watch other countries do it ahead of us and to give us cues on how to smooth that path back to full recovery. Now, some other things that you do that I'm wondering, you know, how you're facing right now is online education and also training. Mm-hmm. How are you addressing those issues during this?
Sure. So training is the face-to-face training for obvious reasons has been impacted heavily. Not many people are doing the courses. We were impacted. We have a certification center in similar fashion in Asia, that in China, basically, that basically classes dried up. And so we have been, it's permitted within our current policies and procedures document to do online live training, kind of like we're doing right now, where they can train a class and just do it virtually. And with many people stuck at home, that's actually been a pretty good option, as well as other IPC Edge has online courses that are not necessarily, that aren't live, they're recorded courses that can also help improve skills. The one piece that we hope to have solved is there has to be proctoring to take the exams. Just think about your college board tests, right? Your SAT or ACT in North America, other exams across the world. You don't get to take those on your own time, you know, without somebody watching over your shoulder. Right. And so IPC has been working crazy hard for the last month, or actually longer, trying to accelerate a solution that will get there. And we believe we'll have a solution by in early April that will hopefully enable the proctoring piece as well. So the training can go forward right now in this kind of format. And then we'll, right now for the training that is occurring, they're having to take the exams after the fact, but hopefully we'll be able to do it in a more timely fashion with this, what we're calling virtual proctoring.
Very, very good. The last time we spoke, when I saw you at and some of your team at IPC Apex, I learned more about your PCB design course that you're doing, which sounds really comprehensive and really good. Will you have any more of those coming up?
Yeah,
we're noticing a spike in this, so I'm thinking
it might
be a good
there's
time.
Some new design courses that are scheduled to come out here in the coming month in April, which I guess is just around the corner here.
So
we're looking forward to that. Some of that may be slightly delayed as we've been basically putting all hands on deck, trying to get things rolling on this virtual proctoring solution, getting all the training centers more capable to close out and all our companies able to do the training, the testing. That's coming very soon. And we're excited about some of those new offerings that you're going to see on the design front in terms of training. So look forward to that.
Yeah, we're doing the same. And I'll, again, put those links for our listeners in the show notes. And then you can follow that. And if you have some extra time at home, maybe you can pop into that class.
The other thing I might just mention is during this time also. So, you know, we've talked a little bit about advocacy. We've talked about training. All that we're doing is trying to be solutions. Let me talk just for a minute about standards.
Standards.
So the core, the thing that you're everybody knows IPC for, right?
Yeah, right, exactly.
So standards, wonderfully, we're actually meeting more often than we ever have because of people not being able to do some of their normal work. They've been more available to dial into committee calls, whereas typically we might have a call every other week. I've heard in some committees they're meeting 3 times a week. And so we're getting a lot of just great participation, which has been wonderful. And so we're looking forward to the standards basically continuing on with an uninterrupted schedule of introduction as has been planned, at least at this point.
Do you think that will hasten some of these? I mean, depending on how long this lasts, but do you think that'll hasten some of those things coming along faster than they might otherwise?
I don't know. It takes a while. You know, you want the whole industry to sound off on standards. And so we don't want to rush it necessarily. We do have a schedule, right, but we're trying to make sure that when we do deliver a standard, that it is truly an industry standard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes sense. Oh, well, we can hope, John. Well, this has been a fascinating, really informative conversation, and I know you're so busy. So thank you so much for updating us. Thank you so much for
my
the
pleasure.
Work you're doing. And
thanks for scheduling it early in the day so I can get on and do all my other things as well.
Yeah, I know. Well, thank you so much. It's my pleasure. So to our listeners, thank you so much for joining us on the On Track Podcast Home Edition, and we hope that this conversation with John Mitchell has been beneficial. Make sure to like, subscribe, and stay in touch. We're going to try to keep getting good information like we share today with John Mitchell. So thanks for joining. We'll see you next time. Until then, remember to always stay on track.